This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It seems like forever ago, but back in 1987, when Prozac was first introduced in the United States, few could have predicted how the rise of psychotropic drugs would utterly transform not just the way mental illness is treated, but mental health practitioners themselves. Our guest today says the world has now been divided between those who treat the brain and those who treat the mind, essentially the psychiatrists and the psychologists. And as that divide widens, he says, it's what's in the best interests of patients that is falling through the crack. So what do you make of it? Have you had to schlep between two different people, one for a prescription and the other for therapy? And does that make sense? Do you think there's an unnecessary divide between treating the brain and the mind? And I guess the biggest question here is psychiatry a profession in crisis? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also comment online. We're at wbur.org/Boston. Well, joining us now is Dr. Daniel Carlat. He is a Massachusetts psychiatrist and author of the new book, Unhinged, The Trouble with Psychiatry, A Doctor's Revelations About a Profession in Crisis. He's also a member of the clinical faculty at Tufts Medical School, and he joins us now. Dr. Carlat, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
So let me just start by asking you, you present this idea in your book that many psychiatrists have basically been reduced to doing these 15-minute med checks with their patients and not an extended bit of talk therapy. But you also say something very interesting, that in some of those early meetings that they may have with patients, they want to know what's going on with the patient, mm-hmm. but they don't really want to know everything. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, it's because when we see a patient, especially for an initial appointment, really what we're trying to do is figure out a diagnosis based on the DSM guidebook, which is a guidebook of different diagnoses. And then we want to match up the symptoms that the patient presents to us with certain medications. And if we learn too much information, we might find that the patient provides us with information that will take us beyond the hour that we've allotted for the initial appointment. And really, more to the point, is that the subsequent appointments, which tend to be 15 or 20 minutes, like you said, those really we tend to want to just capture the basic symptoms such as insomnia, concentration problems, energy problems, things that we can kind of put into the differential diagnosis, as we call it, for a diagnosis, and things that we can use to make a medication decision.
So you're making it sound like psychiatry has been somewhat reduced to like a mechanics profession.
In a sense, that's true. And I certainly don't want to oversell this idea, because especially in Boston, I think there's a lot of psychiatrists that don't like the system as it is. Mm-hmm. And there certainly are psychiatrists that do a lot of therapy. But overall, if you look at the national figures, only about 10% of all psychiatrists nationwide offer therapy to all their patients. And just the percentage of psych visits that involve therapy has decreased fairly drastically over the last 10 years, to the point where less than 30% and maybe less than 25% of all visits to a psychiatrist entail basic, how are you doing? What makes you tick? Let's get to the bottom of your problems kind of therapy.
So have you found this in your own practice here? I mean, you're a practicing psychiatrist. You've got several hundred patients, mm-hmm. I understand. Yep. Are you feeling the same pressures yourself?
I certainly do. I mean, when I began practicing after I finished residency in 1995, I began what most of my colleagues did at that point, which was to start a psychopharmacology, meaning a medication kind of practice. And a lot of that is based on incentives from the insurance companies. But there's also sort of a biomedical culture that you're enculturated in medical school, which is why in the book, one thing I talk about is the difference between psychologists and psychiatrists, in the sense that psychiatrists go to medical school, learn about biomedicine, and think about mental illness in terms of a sort of a biomedical model, whereas psychologists go to 6 or 7 years of psych graduate school and think about psychiatric problems very differently.
But it was ever thus. I mean, because psychiatry as a subspecialty of medicine has always been trained in medical school. So what's the difference now than, say, 20, 30 years ago? I mean, why are so many psychiatrists being forced to basically just spend those 15 minutes to figure out what pill to prescribe?
And it's not really a question of force. It's a question of a whole bunch of different social sort of variables, but certainly the fact that the Prozac type of medications came on the scene in the late 1980s, followed by a slew of other meds with relatively few side effects, made it simply very easy to prescribe medications and truthfully made the consumers want to come in and ask for medications because, in a sense, it's a lot easier to wake up in the morning and take your pill than to go to therapy. I mean, we've got jobs to go to. I mean, we can't afford to spend the time to go to a therapist anymore. We don't want to necessarily spend the time figuring out what I have to do to solve my problem psychologically if there's a pill that we can take.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's exactly on this point where it got me thinking that obviously psychiatry lies within the world of medicine. Medicine lies within the world of science, and science is in the greater culture. So it makes me wonder, is part of this because of what you sort of hinted at, that we as a society have been moving towards this new model of what the brain is, that it is not this unknowable thing, but ultimately, though it's complicated, it is a decipherable biological machine that we will eventually understand and be able to find scientific, chemical and biology-based solutions for, rather than sort of the more unknowable effects of something like talk therapy.
Yes. Well, and I think that within psychiatry, there are many psychiatrists that think that we will get to that point, and I have no doubt that we will at some point, but I think that right now we have become somewhat complacent as professionals, and we tend to sell our patients a bill of goods that we know a little bit more about the brain than we do. And at this point, I think we're literally decades away from truly understanding biochemically what causes mental illness and how our drugs actually work.
Well, I'm speaking with Dr. Daniel Carlat. He's author of the new book, Unhinged, The Trouble with Psychiatry, A Doctor's Revelation About a Profession in Crisis. And we are talking about psychiatry in an era of drugs, insurance company concerns, and the divide between how we treat the brain and the mind. Has all of this had an impact on patients, and has it had possibly an impact on you? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's take a call here. Peter is calling from Cambridge. Welcome to Radio Boston, Peter.
Hi, thank you. And I just want to say that in 32 years of taking psych meds, only for a couple of years have I actually had a prescribing psychiatrist and a psychologist who talked to each other, and that was because they were in the same hospital system. I also have a great concern about the affordability and availability of any kind of mental health care, because in my inquiries, the insurance companies cover so little, and either you have to be really wealthy to afford the good people or really broke to afford subsidized psych care, which is my current situation, in which case the good people don't want to touch the subsidized plan.
Hmm. Well, Peter, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Daniel Carlat, he brings up, he's obviously had a lifetime of experience, it seems, but this issue of the role that insurance plays.
Yes.
And the availability of mental health care overall.
Yes, absolutely. And one thing he talked about was the fact that the psychiatrist tend not to talk to the therapist. And, you know, ideally, there are certain clinical health systems where psychiatrists and therapists do talk to one another. But in my experience, especially when you have hundreds of patients, almost impossible to really coordinate care very well. You know, and in terms of insurance, many, many psychiatrists, unfortunately, don't even take insurance now. So what Peter was saying, that the wealthy can afford the psychiatrists that actually do both the therapy and the medications, is kind of a sad fact. But in my opinion, you know, we get health insurance for a reason. We should be able to use it to get the best care we can possibly get.
Are some psychiatrists not taking insurance because it's just too complicated for them? Or is it also that maybe many insurance companies have put limits on the amount of the number of visits that are covered? So why even enter the therapeutic process if you have to exit it 10 sessions later?
Both of those reasons are probably minor compared to the main reason, which is money. So that most insurance companies don't pay psychiatrists enough, at least not as much as they would like. So 30%, maybe 50% of psychiatrists no longer take managed care insurances so that they can choose their own rate and they can charge more money so that they can make whatever income they choose to make. It's not that they're being greedy, but they feel that the insurance company reimbursements are just too small to justify taking them.
And is that for talk therapy or even just for being the prescribing doctor for a drug?
It's for both, because sometimes insurance companies pay very little for a psychopharmacology visit as well.
Okay. Christina is on the line from Lowell. Welcome to Radio Boston, Christina.
Thank you. I was diagnosed with depression 17 years ago, and I have had psychiatrists who just prescribed and therapists for therapy, and I also had a psychiatrist who did both. And I worked with him until I moved out of state. And I really liked having my psychiatrist be my therapist, because when my meds needed to be adjusted, he was completely in the know about how I was doing and what was going on in my life. There was no catch-up. It felt very connected.
Was it hard for you to find this particular psychiatrist, Christina?
It was luck. The psychiatrist who I'd been seeing just for my meds closed her practice because she didn't want to deal with insurance anymore. And she recommended this man who I ended up working with for years.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Christina. Let's get another one in here. Marjorie's on the line from Middleborough. Welcome to Radio Boston, Marjorie.
Thank you, and thank you for taking my call. My comment is from the point of view of, in the past, being a patient and seeing a psychiatrist and a psychologist. And what I found was that there was a disconnect or discrepancies between what the psychologist thought about medications and my need for medication and what the psychiatrist thought. And it was a pretty frustrating situation. And as a nurse in the community, I see that this is something that a lot of people go through. Mm-hmm. And I might also say I do appreciate your guest's point and that he has addressed this as a problem and has written a book about it, which I look forward to reading. I do take exception to the idea of these meds having relatively few side effects. I do see many people suffering a lot of side effects and having to try to describe their side effects to a psychologist and to a psychiatrist, and again, sometimes getting two different points of view about what to do about that.
Marjorie, thank you so much for your call. So obviously a couple calls there showing the really complicated scenario that patients are facing when they have to enter this divided system.
Right, right. And I agree. There are many pitfalls that occur. And in fact, the last caller who talked about side effects, I agree completely. Fewer side effects now than in the past, definitely still are side effects. And one of the problems that I've run into is that the patients will sometimes have more time with the psychologist or the social worker. They will find out about side effects that I will never hear about, or it may take months and months for me to hear about them. So that it wouldn't it be the ideal mental health professional if one person could do both the therapy and the medication, like another caller was finally, through sheer luck apparently, able to find someone who could really do both and to keep on top of the meds and the therapy at the same time.
You know, Dr. Carlett, it occurs to me that medicine, modern medicine by definition today, is a very divided field overall. I mean, all these specialties are kind of in their own silos. And now you're saying that this silo of psychiatry is subdivided. So is there any way to bring the two halves back together, the study of the mind and the study of the brain, for the benefit of the patients that you're supposed to be treating?
I have some proposals, some of which are fairly controversial among those in my profession. One of which is that psychologists have for a long time now been seeking prescriptive privileges and, in fact, have won them in a couple of states, New Mexico and Louisiana, which are mainly rural states.
So here's cases where someone who did not go to medical school would receive some kind of training and therefore be able to prescribe, you know, the antidepressants or whatever kind of psychiatric medication.
Exactly. And the reason I like that model is that by far the majority, maybe 80% of what I do on a day-to-day basis is psychological. Most of what I do is have conversations like we're having right now, and this is how I make diagnoses. And wouldn't it be nice to have somebody who really has that specialized training in understanding the mind, and then to be able to add the medications as they see fit, as is sometimes necessary for many patients.
Not a popular idea among some of your fellow MDs.
This is a professional turf war, pure and simple. We've seen turf wars like this happen back in the 1960s when the nurse practitioners came on the scene and started prescribing, and many other similar examples. So there's a lot of lobbying money going back and forth between the professions on this issue. But I think that within the next decade or so, we're going to see more and more states approve prescriptive privileges on a limited basis for psychologists.
So that would take care of maybe, it would bring the opportunity for psychologists or non-MDs to prescribe drugs, and so maybe someone could get a form of unified treatment there. What would it take to allow psychiatrists to free themselves from that 15-minute med check formula that they're in now and actually be able to once again fold in talk therapy into their practice.
It's a really, really tricky thing. One of the things that they have to be willing to do is accept lower salaries, which nobody wants to accept less money, especially in this day and age. But another thing is something that I've been doing is just by creative scheduling, spending maybe a little bit less time doing therapy, 30-minute therapy sessions, having maybe a 45 or 30-minute therapy session, then having fitting in a couple of, quote, medication check patients who really don't necessarily need therapy. They may come in for 5 or 10 minutes. So you can kind of adjust your schedule in different ways to do it.
Let's get one more call in here. Greg is calling from Somerville. Welcome to Radio Boston, Greg.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
What's your thought today?
I'm a clinical psychologist, and my question for the guest is, has he noticed a difference in the quality or the motivation of people who choose to go to medical school for psychiatry since 1987? In other words, is there a difference in the individual who chooses this profession based on different kinds of training or because of the medical model?
Thanks for your call, Greg. Dr. Carlat.
Well, generally speaking, if you go into medical school and you want to be a psychiatrist, you're probably going to be somewhat more psychologically minded. But on the other hand, you know, medical school is a tough road to hoe. It does tend to kind of take some of the empathy out of you. And there's actually been some studies that have shown that medical school leads to somewhat less empathy after all the training is said and done. So in some ways, you know, med school may not be the best place for somebody to go if what they're interested in is helping people understand themselves and change their lives.
Dr. Carlat, you had mentioned a little earlier that in New Mexico and Louisiana, psychologists there are now, they've been given privileges to write prescriptions.
Yes.
Has that received any traction here in Massachusetts?
I don't believe so. I think that the Mass Psych Society is fairly strongly against that. I think pretty much every state there's a psychological society that is trying to make inroads there and is trying to lobby the legislature. And it really sort of depends on good old-fashioned politics, who knows whom and how powerful different people are. So I don't see that happening in Massachusetts anytime soon, but there are states like Missouri, Hawaii, kind of states where it's just harder to get access to a psychiatrist, where it's more likely to happen sooner rather than later.
You know, you said something just a moment ago that really caught my attention. You seem to be hinting, why even have psychiatry within the world of medicine at all? Like, why have that as a specialty of medicine? And if really what it takes is good talk therapy plus an ability to write a prescription, why not just excise that from medicine altogether and have it be something that you don't train for in medical school?
Well, I think the reason is that we're always going to have people with neurologic diseases like Parkinson's or MS and things like that who have psychiatric problems. So complicated medical plus psychiatric problems. I think you're always going to need someone like a psychiatrist or a neuropsychiatrist who's trained in medical school to properly deal with the really complicated cases. But I think over time, the field of psychiatry is going to narrow and narrow and narrow, and we're going to have these medical psychologists sort of taking their places to some degree.
Well, that is Dr. Daniel Carlat. He is author of the new book, Unhinged, The Trouble with Psychiatry, A Doctor's Revelations About a Profession in Crisis. He's also a Massachusetts-based psychiatrist and a member of the clinical faculty at Tufts Medical School. Dr. Carlat, true pleasure speaking with you today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, coming up,
they all climbed into the carriage. First, the beautiful white maiden in her splendid gold wedding garments. Then, the black, ugly stepmother with her black, ugly daughter.
A local theater company asks 7 playwrights to reinvent their favorite or maybe least favorite fairy tales. We'll continue the conversation after a break. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.